my skin. It's too much. I can't touch her. Her ass fills out her jeans. I watch the denim stretch around each perfect globe, imagining her belly round, stretching the fabric of her shirts as a feral kind of possessiveness cloaks me, consuming me. My heart suddenly thrashes in my chest. My fingers dig into my palms, wanting to grip her ass, feel the weight, wanting to sink my cock between each cheek, work myself inside her puckering rim. The need to fuck her, knowing she's pregnant, spurs violent desire through my muscles, a course of adrenaline in my veins, to know I'm inside her in every way. Walking behind her, I palm my cock and breathe hard, fighting with that need. It wins. Reaching forward, I slide my hand around her throat. A gasp rattles in my palm as I pull her backwards. Her lower back connects with my erection, and I grind against her. I growl by her ear, wildly territorial, over her, the baby, the scent. She's mine forever, and I don't want to share her with them right now. I cup her pussy with my other hand and lessen some of my ache by dry fucking her lower back. I need you to calm me down, sweet girl. Can't think straight. Her throat rolls against my palm, and she tries to turn, but I don't let her. I reach for the spare room door and guide her through it. I lock it. Little feet rise to tippy toes to shuffle in front of me, trying to mind my gait until we are at the side of the bed. I bend her over it. Releasing her throat and pussy, I push her flat. Her ass arches up like a good girl, presenting herself to me. I pull out my cock, all but panting when I fist the throbbing length, and jerk myself a few times. The ache. Blood boils and expands inside my erection. The need to come a painful building urge. The veins coiling my cock pulse back in my palm. My heart beats inside them. Heat hits my ears. Letting go of my cock, the long hard length throbbing. I tug her jeans down to her ankles, using the material to limit her movements. Then I rip her underwear to the side, bearing a tight, young pussy. Can't wait. I slide into her, bucking her forward when I hit her depths, abruptly taking her from empty to stuffed with my pulsating thick length. She cries out, just once. Good girl. I still release a long, deep groan. I see black, the darkness of my shredding resolve taking hold, at just the clenching of her slick, strong walls enveloping me. She clings, pulses, wanting more. Shh, sweet girl, don't do that. Let me calm down first.
I want you like this.
She moans, her voice strained, muffled, her fingers digging into the sheets by her head. No. You don't. I can't lose control with you anymore.
Who else will you lose control with then, sir?
Christ! I growl when her pussy massages me. Damn her. Fist the sheets harder, sweet girl. Hold tight. I press my hand to the seam of her ass, slide my thumb to play with her pretty asshole, and watch myself fuck her wanton little channel. The lips of her pussy hug the root of my cock, so stretched, so pink. Then I draw out quickly against all her muscles, working around me for control. I slam back in, beat another cry from her, and study the way she swallows my cock again. Fuck, so responsive around me. I drop my knees to either side of her, cover her soft spine with my torso, buck my hips, and fuck her fast, each thrust taking me deeper. Taking her like a fucking feral dog, I grunt to the beat of my hips, feeding my hand between her abdomen and the mattress, I cradle her womb. She is growing my children. You're pregnant, sweet girl. You're mine in every way now, my little body to fill and use. That's it. A violent groan sounds from my throat, losing my load in her early, faster than I've ever done before. Uncontrolled. I pump in hard, spurting hotly, tremors racketing through convulsing pelvic muscles. I pull out before I've even finished and shove my fingers into her swollen, wet depths, pushing my cum in further, knowing she was close, intent on making her come. My cock still drips as I work her writhing little body until she's trembling and squirming, coming on my hand and to my penetration. She gasps.
Sir!
Worming slowly on the mattress. A few moments pass by, with the steady twisting of my fingers in her warm pussy. The peak of her pleasure slowly levels, her trembling muscles falling lax to the mattress.
God, sir, you can always lose control with me, but you know...
I can hear her cheeky grin as she says,
I love you works too.
I smile through the corner of my mouth. I love you, little dear.
Chapter 30. Fawn. A twinge between my thighs plays out in my slow, sultry walk as I stride in time with Clay's confident steps towards the outside area. The entire west wall of the house is glass paneling. Through the span of window panes, a smaller building is set a few metres from the grassed lawn. A granny flat or a gym, I don't know which, but it's lavish. The abundant lawn stretches for many metres, rolling over a small hill and down. A trampoline, one of those with a protective net, is set up under a large tree thick with foliage. I've never been on a trampoline. I hope our children have one of those too. In an alfresco of sorts, I spot Max sitting on an outside lounger. Across from him, Cassidy natters sweetly. Her strawberry blonde hair is in a high ponytail, bouncing behind her as she talks. I can't hear voices through the glass, but I can see Xander and Bronson both standing over them, their eyes trained on Max. Conversation passes, causing smiles and chuckles. The Butcher brothers are more casual, ordinary, than I'm used to since being with Clay. They are in jeans and t-shirts, looking every bit young Australian men. Bronson is painted from his neck to the tips of his fingers in colourful tattoos, and I'm not sure I ever noticed just how many there are. And Max has muscles bigger than my head bulging from his upper arms, and Xander looks so perfectly cut, he may have no body fat at all. All the boys blue-eyed, dark-haired, confident, pinch-yourself kind of gorgeous. So, really, they couldn't be ordinary if they tried. Despite that, my feet take me impatiently towards them, until I am slightly ahead of Clay, pulling the sliding door open, earning myself the attention of all three Butcher boys and Cassidy. I rush to Xander when his baby blues land on me and throw my arms around him, warmth from his embrace suffusing me. He's my friend. I'd do it again. You're okay.
Hey, girlie.
He holds me to him for a quick moment before pushing me out in front of him.
Now, you listen to me. Don't ever put yourself in danger for me again. I fucked up. I went out on my own. You are not to blame for what happened. I am. You hear me?
Sighing, I nod, because he's right. He did fuck up. You did fuck up. Don't do that again. He laughs with that boy next door ease, cool and charismatic. The sound bounces around the alfresco in a welcoming way.
Yes, boss.
Feeling eyes on me, I look at Max, his left leg propped up on the cushioning, bandages wrapped with care around his thigh, angry red flesh peeking out above and below the white fabric. I swallow and shake my head. Are you in pain? A smirk builds across his face.
Never been better.
You said that like you really meant it. He looks at Cassidy, meaning and affection in his grey eyes.
I did.
Then his gaze shifts over my shoulder to Clay, his smirk dropping and his brows weaving.
Are you here to give me a hard time? I'm here to check on my brothers.
Clay strides over to Xander, cupping his bruised cheeks and checking him over for a moment before kissing both sides. It is a very European gesture, one I have only seen him do a few times.
Are you well?
Xander nods, with his big brother's palms bracketing his cheeks.
You did the right thing, Clay. You know...
Clay pulls him to his chest, a firm hold that silences more words between them.
That's enough. There was no decision without pain.
He releases Xander and focuses his attention on Max.
I won't take what you did lightly.
Warning wraps around each word.
One day soon, when you're healed and strong, we will beat that night out of each other in the ring.
I can't think of anything worse than seeing the Butcher brothers fight, but Max stares straight at Clay, his eyes meeting the challenge, the warning, in an accepting way. He leans back further into the lounge but stifles a wince that forces Cassidy to inhale a shaky breath as though she was struck with pain at the exact same moment. You should be in bed, Max.
I'm not living in a damn bed for the next 2 months, little one.
He reaches out and strokes her cheek.
Don't press this. That's not me. Let's play the betrayed brother game another time.
Bronson states coolly, but in a way that suggests he's not going to allow a rebuttal.
Maxipad is being skinned at the moment. I know Burns, and that's got to feel like he's losing a layer. Also, I'm hungry. Those 2 points are not related. I don't think.
Cassidy curls her nose up, her hazel freckles collecting along the bridge. Gross, Bronson.
I know Butch has visited.
Clay keeps his eyes on Max but walks me over to a spare chair, nodding for me to sit down on it. I do as I'm nodded to do. Yes, twice. Cassidy says, pridefully. Clay stands behind me, resting his hands on my shoulders, his fingers circling the nape of my neck slowly.
Has Mother been to visit you?
Quickly, they flick their gazes around the room, bouncing a look of significance between them. It's deeply personal. Painful, too. I can see it hidden in their eyes. Clay notices it. His fingers on my neck have stilled, uncertainty in their frozen tips. Why would she visit? Cassidy asks. Clay's younger brothers somehow grow larger when she speaks, a visual display of cloaking themselves, averse to the topic.
I know there are some issues here.
Clay begins smoothly, an aura of authority to his delivery.
She's made mistakes, boys. But she is your mother.
Mistakes, Cassidy whispers. The anxious way she said that chills my skin.
Little one, don't.
Max says deeply. Clay's fingers still haven't moved, haven't continued in a contented, relaxed way across my skin, stiff like needles now. His voice is deep and raspy behind me as he says,
I'm going to need you three to finally explain what the hell the woman who brought you into this world did that is so beyond redemption. All three of you despise her. Her life was not easy either. She was taken from England from her family, dropped in the district, and made to raise you three while Butch fucked around. I know she's cold, but after all she has been through, I don't despise her! She despises us!
Xander's words howl around the three brothers like a ghost exorcised from a soul. Goosebumps rush along my arms, raising my little blonde hairs.
She tried to kill us!
Clay's fingers twitch.
What do you mean?
Max's eyes fall to Cassidy's paling face.
Go inside, little one. I don't want you here for.
Don't you dare, Max Butcher. She shakes her head defiantly. Don't you dare. I'm not leaving your side. Xander continues.
She smacked us around.
Oh God, what is happening? Smacked them around? Been through with that cunt Victoria. Shoshana's words leak back into my mind and my cheeks fall cold.
She disciplined you.
Clay corrects, and I hate his tone in this moment. Seeing Xander wince, Bronson turn to stone and Max growl at Clay's blatant dismissal, I hold my stomach protectively. Something bad has happened to them, something that they have never shared with Clay. It's clear in the way that sentence affects them deeply. Their reactions all mimic and bar as though they can't escape the influence.
Fuck you, Clay. She tried to drown Bronson.
Xander's face twists in anguish as he points to Max.
She left him in a bathtub until he was so cold his heart was barely beating. She left me in a closet for 2 weeks and told everyone I was staying at a friend's house. That's not even the half of it. She isn't going to check on Max, Clay. She doesn't care.
My hands shake on my abdomen. Clay didn't know. Then I remember Max's outburst from a few days ago.
What about when we were just children? Damn it! We needed our big brother! What about then?
It is as though Clay hears those words as I do, his breathing becoming rough and defensive. Sadness spreads through my veins like acid. Clay didn't know, I mutter aloud, and they look at me as though I've spouted another head. Why didn't you tell him?
He didn't want to know.
Max spits out.
That is not true.
Clay curses through gritted teeth.
What were the circumstances of this? What did you do to... Is there a situation?
Xander steps closer.
That would make locking me in a closet for 2 weeks a suitable punishment from a mother to a child. No.
Clay drops his hands from my shoulders altogether, balling them into tight, white-knuckled fists.
I only mean that. Would it be a suitable punishment to drown your child if they broke something?
Xander challenges.
No. Would it be excusable if she was drunk, not in her right mind? Of course not!
Xander's eyes fill with tears.
Then why do you need the circumstances and reasons for why this happened? Because that is how I handle things, God damn it!
Clay shouts, and I jump to my feet. Turning to touch his shoulder for support, I feel the powerful muscles that are hot, pulsing, and ready. Clay Butcher, a man whose control is unparalleled, sounds and feels as though he may be breaking down. Clay glances over his shoulder at me, his eyes dropping to my abdomen.
Your brothers will only get in your way,
he utters, and it's a sentence lost in a memory that sparks through his gaze like wildfire. His eyes shift to Xander again.
You didn't tell me. The bruises didn't give it away.
Xander asks, his voice low and broken, forcing my heart to squeeze. I picture her talking to me by the pool, interrogating me, needing to please. Like always, I thought she was like Clay, just guarded, unreadable, maybe slightly bitter due to her hardships. No, I was wrong. I touch my lower belly. I don't want her anywhere near you, sweet baby.
I presumed you'd been in fights.
Clay says angrily, his tone laced with confusion and regret. Then he bites out.
Fuck!
Bronson nods once as he says,
So did everyone else. And you didn't fight back.
Clay states to himself, more than to his brothers.
You let her hurt you.
Bronson hums.
What would you have us do, beautiful brother? Hit our pretty mother back. Butch doesn't know.
Max says curtly.
We keep it that way. No one knows. No one needs to know.
Clay nods stiffly and reaches for Xander, who is losing his battle to stifle his anguish. The honesty rips through him. The truth bleeds out as they embrace. Xander buries his head.
I wanted to tell you so many times. I wanted to go to you so many times.
Clay holds his little brother and it all comes out. A flood of sentiment, the captive feeling he masks so well, the need to remain strong, to make them strong, all flowing from him.
I wasn't there for you.
Clay's voice is strained.
I know. I'll make it up to you. If you'll let me.
Both men shake slightly as the moment passes between them. A significant moment that binds their pasts. The fork that divided them slowly being bridged. I thought they had him on a pedestal. And maybe they did, but more than that. Clay's brothers thought he was unreachable. Unreasonable, uncaring. Maybe he was. Until now. Bronson moves over to their shoulders.
I'm getting jelly.
He mocks, hiding his raw response within humour. But Clay doesn't have his armour up anymore. He isn't suited and smooth. He's confused. And I bet confusion in a man like Clay Butcher stokes intensity. He cares, showing this by dragging Bronson into the huddle.
I'm proud of you,
he says to him.
You were the better big brother. You were the right one.
Tears fall from my eyes, watching them unleash the decades-old lies. They always loved each other, but they were torn apart by the actions of a woman who didn't love any of them. Clay pulls from their huddle and rounds the chair, heading straight for Max.
Don't do that,
Max warns. Clay ignores him, kneeling at his brother's side. Max stiffens at the closeness, and my breath becomes shallow as my lungs war with whether to breathe relief or surge from my body with panic. So when Clay presses his forehead to Max's and squeezes his eyes shut with words and pain moving them below his eyelids, I nearly whimper at the rawness. Max lifts his arm to shove him away. No. He doesn't. Instead, he tenses on the act of defensiveness, but stops himself. God. My spine steels, and I sense everyone in the alfresco, Bronson, Xander, Cassidy, collectively freeze in case the smallest change in energy, the beat of a butterfly's wings, jolts Max from accepting this moment. Max lets Clay stay close, still stiff and looking like a dog cornered. A pained groan leaves Max's throat as his big brother holds their foreheads together. A sob breaks from my lips.
I understand, brother.
Clay's strong timbre is guttural and angry and sorrowful, a raw symphony of all those sounds combined.
I understand.
My heart is exhausted. Overthrown by too many emotions, experiencing all of Clay's as plainly as I feel my own. I stare at Bronson and Xander, watching them smile at Clay and Max, at Cassidy, who sobs silent tears with her hand over her mouth. There is so much love here, even when it is stretched thin under extreme pressure, through tests and betrayals, they never give up on family. I hold my stomach, thinking about never leaving her, him alone in a caravan. Thinking about the kind of love displayed in front of me between the most powerful men in the city. Thinking about irrefutable loyalties, not giving up on one another, family. And I realize my fairy tale, an orphan's fairy tale, is coming true. And there it is, my third good thing. Clay Butcher, number one. His heir, number two. Family, number three. Chapter 31, Fawn. He hasn't said a word to me since we left Max and Cassidy's house. He gazes at our joined hands in his lap, at his thumb as it trails over my knuckles so softly, it's barely a feather touching the wind. He's disappeared into his eyes, and my heart drops under the weight of all the truth set free today. The energy in the car is thick, smothering me with his melancholy and regret. It's not his fault. Or did he suspect all along? I wonder whether he knew, deep down, whether he saw the signs that his mother used to abuse his younger brothers, but just like with the little girl in the hospital, he didn't ask questions. The Cosa Nostra was infallible. The Cosa Nostra was his moon. And his mother is a part of that. Can I take you somewhere, sir? I turn my body to face his and pull our connected hands to my thighs. His arm is heavy and lifeless until he refocuses and lifts his gaze to meet mine. Hey, I say softly, seeing him dark, consumed, lost within his own blue eyes. Can I take you somewhere, sir? I lean towards him and touch his warm cheek. His jawline is coarse with the start of new hairs. As I hold his face, he closes his eyes and sighs roughly, forcing my heart to twist. It's okay, sir. Desperate to be closer, I twist to unbuckle my belt, needing to crawl onto his lap, hold him, and tell him it's not his fault. He couldn't have known, but he stops me by covering my hand with his. He shakes his head once and lightly squeezes my fingers over the buckle.
Your belt stays on, sweet girl.
I blink at him as he turns to face forward, the backs of my eyes burning. He is dealing with his thoughts in isolation. How far away is Stormy River Junction from here?
20 minutes or so, little dear.
He responds absently, but pulls our hands to his lap, authoritarian and dominant, and continues to stroke my skin with the pad of his thumb. That is it. His way of letting me in, and I can accept it. From a man like Clay Butcher, even the glimmer of vulnerabilities should be cherished, noticed, and appreciated. I relax my hand on his. Can I show you something? Can I take you somewhere, sir?
Of course.
Looking through the clean, tinted windows at the slums of Stormy River, it seems like a million years have passed since I lived in this neighborhood. Housing flats shadow the road on both sides. The lawns have stories to tell, secrets in the blades. Like every patch, every dried circle of dirt and roots, tells of a party or a stripped vehicle or a tent from an evictee. The poverty and boredom echo, the grass never having time to recover. That's poverty. Patches of grass. Here, I point, and the vehicle pulls up beside a brown brick block of flats with a dozen men, older than me but younger than Clay, sitting on the steps. They rise to their feet, eyeing the sparkling Chrysler like a prize as we park. Behind us, our convoy lines the street, including one shiny red beauty. My car, driven by my butler, Rat. Clay steps out in that suave, effortless confidence I adore, that everyone is drawn to, envious of, that speaks of danger and warning without the need to scream or demand it. It's implicit, infallible. From inside the vehicle, I watch him take his time, smooth down his tie, and calmly assess the neighborhood, the park across from us, and the flats to our side. He rounds the black bonnet and opens my door for me. The air is stale and lacking as it enters the car. Everything in Connolly smells like something. Flowers, lawn clipping, cigars, roses. But here, there is little to settle on. Nothing and too much all at once. I climb out, and my nerves spike, butterflies taking flight, seeing the world I no longer belong to reflected at me in the stares of the men now swaggering slowly towards us. Clay faces them, his expression as impassive as the devil's might be, staring at angry stray dogs, unimpressed, unaffected. Our driver appears beside Clay, halts by the car and sweeps the sides of his black jacket back when he grips each hip. Guns on both sides flash in the sun. The gang of men freezes on a patch of dried lawn. A new memory collects there. The day Clay Butcher came to town. The men converse quietly and then return to their spot on the steps, deciding not to cause trouble. Staring across the street at the open park with the old tombstones, I take a big breath and thread my fingers through Clay's. I lead him across the street and into the cemetery. It was the cheapest one in the district at the time. I only had the money from the sale of the caravan to use, and it all went on this plot. Cremation is cheaper, they had told me. But how would she become a butterfly if they burned her body? It was an unbearable question. It still is. It represents my innocence. It instills my ideals. The parts of me that are her. My eyes start to scorch. Hot pokers of sorrow sliding in while tears are wanting out. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm suddenly affected by this place, by her. I just wanted to introduce Clay to my mum. Thought he might talk about his if he knew more about mine. We get to the spot. At least, I think. I use my sandals to move the overgrown grass on the metal plates until I find her. Then I sit down on the grass, folding my legs below my backside. I read the plate. Ashley Harlow, my mum. I pause and look up at Clay. His dark brows are pinched together, a thick worry line protruding between them. I like his frown, all his emotions really. Every single one. Mum? This is Clay Butcher. Smiling sadly, I look back at her name. It cost extra for more letters, so I only put her name, not beloved mum or friend or whatever, just her name. I know it's been a while. I pull my hair over my shoulder and play with the ends at my waist. But then, we spent so little time together when you were alive, it doesn't seem that strange. I didn't really miss you. I'm suddenly choked on that redundant lie as it moves to the back of my throat, forcing me to swallow around it. I do miss you, I admit aloud and to myself. It's just easier to miss you now because I missed you so fucking much when you were alive. I miss you less now because I don't expect you. But I do still miss you. Suddenly, Clay sits down behind me. He pulls me back to rest my spine on his hard, packed torso, with his long, muscular legs bracketing mine. He's processing today, and I understand. He's still present, though, and he's making sure I know it. I'm pregnant, I say to the plate and the patchy grass, and Clay's heart thumps faster behind me. The happy kind, though, Mum, not the mistake kind. I lean further into him, rolling my head along his hard chest. Sir, I muse, and he hums in response. I think you didn't know your mum very well. I twirl my hair around my finger. And I can relate. But we shouldn't lie anymore. I miss my mum. I missed her when she was alive, and I miss her now. And I think that you should ask questions this time. That you should find the truth and not let the lies keep everyone apart.
Are you taking care of me now, sweet girl?
I smile at that. Yes, because you're letting me, sir.
This truth is dangerous, little dear. There is no good that can come from...
I think your brothers need you to do this. I think they need you to be their protector now. It's not too late.
What would you suggest?
I swallow and whisper, make her liable. I wish I could make mine see what she did, understand it. She killed herself and left me to the system. She was never liable for me, alive or not, and now she will never be liable for me. Make sure your mum is.
I have my father to consider.
It will destroy your brothers if you ignore what happened today.
I don't plan on ignoring it, sweet girl.
End the secrets, sir. If they have to continue to live with this secret, they may look like big, strong men now, but inside they are still letting her hurt them.
They're still protecting her.
Yeah, but who is protecting them? He exhales hard. As he contemplates, moments move between us with the breeze and the stale, stormy river air. Finally, Clay says,
My pretty little queen.
He leans down and runs his nose against the curve of my neck, breathing me in hard.
Strong and confident and full of opinions, using her voice.
Beaming at my mother's grave, accepting her ideals and my own inner strength, at peace with me, I cuddle my middle, cradling my stomach. Because of your baby in my belly, sir.
No, sweet girl.
His arms sweep over mine to mirror my position. My heart expands in my rib cage, hope streams through my veins, and our future grows in my womb.
Your power has nothing to do with me, little dear.
Chapter 32, Clay. Staring at her through the glass French doors, I'm tense with the small distance between us, knowing the profound things taking part inside of her, knowing what I put inside her, my responsibility, draws me to her like gravity. My pretty little queen. My child. Mine. I loved her first, and I'll worship what she gives me. Everything my father said to me is true. Missing her swell, becoming a mother, raising our children would be the worst kind of suffering. And her mother missed everything. Her whole young life. She left her alone to survive. I won't do that. Can't even bear the thought of her alone and huddled in our bed with a swollen stomach. And damn it, I won't share those moments either. Outsource them, have others protect her, dote on her, so I can work in the city. Unacceptable. I refuse to miss a moment. Refuse to have her live a similar life to her younger self, alone and wanting her mother. I will be present. Liable. Madonna mia. I'm going to resign as mayor. I draw my cigar in, the ember eating at the paper, and watch my young pregnant girl play with her white kitten. My little dear is so many things. At first glance, she's fragile and delicate, playing on the floor with a creature she matches. Yet 2 days ago, she was trekking through a burnt forest to protect my brother. This morning, she was taking my feral thrusts to calm and settle the volatility inside me. And mere hours ago, she was counseling me with wisdom far beyond her age. How the world put her together so flawlessly, it's hard to fathom such a perfect creature. She is made for me. Innocence, resilience, determination, sexual submission. And she's so fucking fertile, it makes me frenzied. I'll keep her pregnant, and it'll be easy. She'll carry my heirs. She'll make me a better man. Christ, I've seen it. She'll keep me grounded, open for my family, empathetic and mindful of my brothers when in the past I wasn't. My awareness drifts to their confessions, to the reasons Max closed off. Bronson lost his mind, and Xander hides his. Butch failed them. I failed them. My focus on the Cosa Nostra, on Jimmy Storm, on being their heir, is my downfall as a brother. It laid the path that kept us divided. I regret my father's ignorance, but I can't blame him for his passion. Not now that I understand it. Dual-colored eyes flash at me through the window, and I drop the half-smoked cigar to the ground, preferring her scent to that of my long-term addiction. The ember smudges the pavers as I step on it and walk inside, twitching to be closer to my reason to breathe. She is my reality now. After the truths from my brothers, the concept of my present, of my past, being riddled with these secrets, she is the constant. The thing I use to ground myself. She smiles at me, her long blonde hair cascading down her shoulders like a golden stream, and I drop to my knees in front of her, pressing my forehead to her chest. She holds me to her, and I sigh. Tell me, sweet girl, does what my brothers told us today make you uneasy?
Of course.
A hum, displeasure in my very veins over that. Does it scare you? Does her presence scare you, little dear?
I don't want her anywhere near us,
she says quietly, and her honesty stokes the displeasure to a burn. I don't like that. You need to go to bed, sweet girl, I state, my voice rough in that order. She cups the back of my neck, and I roll my face against her little breasts. The supple flesh molds around me, earning her a groan for her perfection. I'm so damn enamored, so utterly raw with her, so unnaturally protective. It aches and bleeds. It cuts in through layers and spills violent thoughts. Love is... Christ! It is heart-thrashing, fists clenching, muscles taut and ready. It is fight mode. Go to bed. I state curtly, knowing what I must do now. Stay in bed. I'm going to have a whiskey with my mother tonight.
I could come with you.
Absolutely not. Believe me, the last thing I want is to be even an inch away from you. If I could, sweet girl, I would exist only when with you. I slide my palms up her slim legs and thighs and cover her abdomen from hip to hip with protective hands. And him. One day I will exist only for you and what you make for me. But I have to ask.
Questions.
Yes. I close my eyes, holding them pressed together with my forehead against her chest. Her nipples pebble beneath her shirt, and my cock responds. I mouth them softly, and her fingers tighten in my hair as she moans. For my little dear, who told me to do so, I say against her flesh. And for my brothers, I continue to roll my face against her, and I won't bring you into any stressful situations. Nothing but comfort for you, little dear. Imagining her defying me again, escaping, picturing her rushing across the parking lot with my baby inside her, her nervousness about being around my mother, I growl. Fuck. Don't push me now. You will do as you're told, or drive me to the edge of insanity. I won't handle you defying me. I won't do as you're told.
Yes, sir.
I open my eyes and lift my head to meet a vibrant green and a cloudy blue iris staring at me, uncertain, but not afraid. She sees me. Raising one hand, I stroke downward from her brows, forcing her eyes closed with my fingertips, needing to touch her enchanting gaze. I worship you, I say, still on my knees for her. It's almost a goddamn prayer position. As I rise to my full height, she cranes her neck to keep eye contact, a hint of worry coasting across her pretty face. It stirs me further, knowing she's uncomfortable, awakening evil that reaps for her, her alone, fixing things. I lean down to take her lips, forcing moans of enjoyment through them that I claim as my own, suck into my mouth. She gasps for air around my tongue. Breaking our kiss, I nod at the stairs, then watch intensely as her beautiful body turns and climbs them. Fuck, I have to move us to the first floor. She disappears, and I clench my teeth within a smooth smile when I no longer have my eyes on her. The volatility is there, simmering. Flattening my tie, I walk towards the cigar lounge on the far side of the house, paging Q to bring my mother to me as I go. Within a few moments, a voice precedes her high heels.
What a lovely invitation to receive.
I lean back, nursing my liquor, watching her approach in a white blouse and navy satin pants. This room is dim, intimate, and perfect for deemed privacy. I've not used it since Jimmy died. He used to have gatherings between these walls, the kind that ended in lust-filled exhibitionism. I liked it then. Now, I want nothing more than to watch my little dear in any capacity. Through the sliding doors to my left, an outhouse with a sauna stands, and I've taken my fair share of women in that space, even under the eye of Jimmy's strategically placed surveillance. I make a note to take Fawn there, have her spread her pretty white thighs, sweat, and come while I watch. Returning my gaze to my mother, I say, "You have been asking me for a drink for months now. I've been busy, so I am making time for you." Nodding to the opposite sofa chair, I order her to sit. Q heads towards the raised corner bar, readying himself to be at my disposal for beverages with a twist. Across from me, another whiskey waits, and within the brown pool is a concoction consisting of a few things, namely sodium pentothal, otherwise known as truth serum. I've used it in the past in interrogations. The Cosa Nostra has used it throughout history. Its street name is a lie. It's not a magical serum that forces the user to spout the truth through fighting lips. It is, however, a sedative that relaxes the brain and inhibits clever thinking. It fogs. The facts are easy to recall, whereas it's far harder to construct a lie when under the influence. She slides onto the ruby-hued sofa and reaches for the short glass, eager to start drinking. Good girl.
What has brought this on, Clay?
I wasn't pleased with the way you spoke in the meeting a few days ago. I reprimand with a hint of distaste. I wasn't happy with the way you appeared, either. Is my father treating you well?
He does his thing.
She stares into the translucent dark liquor, thrilled by it. Her old friend.
I do mine. Clay, you have far more important things to concern yourself with.
I concern myself with whatever I choose, Mother. And right now, that is you.
Well, I thought you wanted me to lay off the alcohol. Always so concerned about me. What has caused this sudden change in your disposition?
She isn't a fool. Remember who she is. I do not like you drinking. I do find myself often protective over you. But Fawn is pregnant. I offer as a way to explain my change of heart, my desire to discuss my future, discuss motherhood. I'm making an exception tonight while I find myself in a position I never thought I would be in. And perhaps you are the only person to understand my predicament. I never wanted children, I say, lifting my ankle to rest on my knee. I was contented with my brothers producing heirs for the Cosa Nostra. She folds one thigh over the other, sipping her whiskey. Her eyes rest on my face easily.
I'm pleased you put the girl to use, Clay.
I clench my jaw. She is not worthy to have an opinion on Fawn. My lips slice into a smile that is entirely lethal. She is not like you, I say, bearing the acid on my tongue, as that was phrased as a compliment.
I'm like you.
She rocks her top leg over her other. She's comfortable in a man's space. She knows it. She stared at the misogyny in our business with venom pursing her red-painted lips. It must have bred hatred in her.
I should have been born a man.
I don't enjoy children.
Neither do I. You were barely a child to me, raised by the Cosa Nostra. It was only your brothers who were children to me. But you won't be stuck with your children, Clay. She will. You won't have to concern yourself with them. Just make them. You can come and go as you please and fuck whomever you want. That is your right.
I sip my whiskey, wishing for a cigar, but I won't smoke inside anymore. Reaching up, I rub my jaw, contemplating her words. They are full of bitterness, a tone masking a true motivation. I let the time, her contentment, and her deemed status as my equal pass between us as she drinks. Finally, I say, that's not what you want me to do.
Yes, I do.
She presses, with a smile that is anything but wholesome, curved in a way that suggests she cares little about Fawn, only what Fawn can give us.
I'm glad you're not falling all over her like your brothers do for their women. It makes me so disappointed. I'm glad you're more like me.
Not like my father, I pray, watching her liberally enjoy the liquor. He was never around either. You want me to be like him and...
No, Clay. Your father is soft. Your father was never around because he spent most of his life groveling over...
She smiles wryly, and I glance at her half-empty whiskey.
Never mind. You have always been more like me. Not soft for anyone. We're the same.
I have always felt so.
You are nothing like your brothers.
She smiles approvingly, and I dislike that.
Bronson was such a wimp when he was a baby. He would cry so much and at everything. I couldn't stand it. You won't have to worry about that. Only make sure she doesn't coddle them. Make them hard. Discipline them hard. Or you'll end up with weaklings.
I force myself to relax, resting my fist below my chin, casual as I assess her every expression. I would have drowned him, I say, without mirth.
I nearly did,
she admits, unbidden, and my veins set ablaze, but outwardly I merely chuckle. She discloses it so easily, so seamlessly. She continues.
I was alone in the house. It wasn't my fault. I was struggling, and he would scream and scream. My mother was in England. My husband...
She sneers, derision and contempt dripping from her lips.
Off chasing another woman, of course. I was all alone to deal with them. You won't have to do that.
I zero in on her eyes, filled with accusations, bubbling with memories. Men and women enjoy nothing more than connecting over their dislikes, their hate. Toxic discussions are addictive. So I use them. Use her isolation, her self-pity, and ask, what other woman?
Clay.
She waves her empty glass of whiskey, making a large gesture with it.
Your half-brother's mother. It's not a secret anymore. Luca has told you.
A woman scorned. Larger gestures after relaxed ones indicate a spike in passion. I hear my deceased Don's words. Jimmy Storm was the master of reading body language. Every pantomime, every tick, he was a fucking hound, and he taught me about tales. I nodded Q, and he dutifully offers her a refill of the dastardly concoction. As is her way, she accepts without offering him her attention, an elitist with her every glance. Connor's mother.
Yes, Madeline.
Her name falls from my mother's mouth like poison.
She had all the men in the district pawing after her. I couldn't stand the little mouse. And now your father is set on healing this memory. He talks about her with the bastard. He brings him around our house.
She stares at me expectantly, yearning for my sympathy, for my outrage. I tighten my brows, let her vent.
Can you imagine what that is like for me?
The bastard. My children will be bastards. Lifting my whiskey glass, I silently order Q to top it up, making it seem as though I am drinking generously also. This is why you have looked so unwell, I say smoothly.
At least you have noticed.
Her spine hits the sofa seat behind her. Her position slumping. Her arms are seemingly heavier than before, but she doesn't notice, keenly fighting the weight to finish her second glass.
It was her death anniversary a few days ago, or whatever people call it, and he had the boy around to mourn her, to wallow. I can't stand to be in that house with that flaunted in front of me.
I set my glass down on the table. Lean back further and ran down the regret swarming through me. She hates them. Everyone. I don't like that.
I know you don't.
Her head hits the back of the chair, her neck now too loose to control. She is slipping from reason. Her eyes begin to daze and her speech comes out slurred.
You have always looked at me as though you wanted to protect me from this entire world, even when you were young. I am the only woman you have ever looked at like that. Not Aurora, not that fawn girl. You care about your mother. But your father, well, he turned out to be a disappointment, simpering after that Australian tart. Risking alliances with Nerick and the entire Cosa Nostra to do so. Well, I put a stop to that years ago.
A wave of unease rises through my chest, lifting the stakes of this conversation as I ask, how did you put a stop to it, Mother? She tries to smile, but the curve of her lips won't settle. Her mouth becoming hard to control.
I tried to help him, Clay, lessen the hold she had on him. It was brutal to see him so pathetic. I tried to make Luca's life easier when I saw